So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 10, and hope you enjoyed the show from, 2 weeks ago? I know it's been a little bit of a while since we've been here. And enjoyed the spotlight topic of course, the Rogue One trailer and Rebels. As always, I'm Mikey B, and joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hi, everyone!
If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, or send us some email through our website, resistanceradio.net. Also, you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypable.com. So, welcome back, Danya.
Yeah, it's been... We had a little bit of a break.
Yeah, we had a little break. And for those who are wondering, it was real-life stuff. Unfortunately, I had to travel due to a death in the family, and just due to time zone differences, being in California and Danya being in the UK, you know, just things just never worked out, plus the constant traveling just didn't work for us. Unfortunately, it was just something where I couldn't even post about it, because I was just kind of, you know, family important for it. So I am sorry I couldn't be there, but trust me, I had lots of fun out in California seeing my family, you know, celebrating the life of those who of the person who passed. But we have a lot of Star Wars stuff to talk about today.
We do. Which I now have my outlet back for just talking about all of this stuff, because in the time that we have been off the air, I finally got The Force Awakens on digital release and Blu-ray!
About time.
It felt so good, because I set up Amazon to send me text messages when stuff gets delivered. So I was at work, and I get a text message being like, "Hey, we've delivered a package to you today." And I was like, "Awesome. I work 10 minutes away from where I live. I can go back on my lunch break to just get it so that I can open it up and hold it in my hands," which is exactly what I did. I couldn't even watch it because I was at work and I don't have a Blu-ray player at work, so I couldn't even put it on quietly in the background. I literally went home on my lunch break just to pick it up so I could hold it.
You know, I'll tell you this, I actually have my Blu-ray in front of me just because, you know, I didn't know if we were actually going to talk about it again, but it's in my hands. But it's one of those things that I remember getting in the car, and I couldn't wait to get home. I had to open it up right then and there and flip through the packaging and everything. So yeah, it's definitely exciting. Force Awakens disc.
I've watched all of the additional material now, and I can't remember who mentioned it, but the John Williams bit, I was an absolute mess watching that. It was tears and...
It was so good, wasn't it? It was amazing. Yeah, so yeah, definitely. I think the featurettes on it were good. Well, before we jump into all the stuff about that, because I do want to actually, because there is some news content about The Force Awakens bonus content, I do want to talk a little about Indie PopCon. We'll be there live June 17th through 19th. That's in Indianapolis, Indiana. It should be pretty fun, right? We're going to have a table there. We'll do a live video podcast. You guys will get to see me in all my wonderful Star Wars t-shirts.
Yes, and I am most of the way there with that little Star Wars themed outfit that I was planning. So thank you to people who sent me actual links to places where I could find an orange skirt. Got one that was fairly-ish close to what I wanted, and now I'm making alterations to it with a friend. So we're doing some sewing, and it's lots of fun.
Yeah, and thank you to those who sent me a link, too, for an orange skirt. whether I get the chance to get it or not, I don't know. But who knows? We'll see what happens in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this week, we don't have a guest host with us, so it is just me and Danya. But I want to go straight into the news today. You cool with that, Danya?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So let's go ahead and start with just talking about, you just got the Force Awakens Blu-ray and DVD, you know, package, the UK edition. I know it's a different color and everything. But obviously it's been out in the US for a while, and I was just telling you, just the other day, I got a notification on my phone about an update to my iTunes exclusive version. Star Wars The Force Awakens bonus content is actually available now on iTunes. You can actually get another featurette. It's called Dressing the Galaxy. It's about a 7-minute video all about the costume designers and the costumes in Star Wars The Force Awakens, which I was, like I said, I was kind of surprised at how little extra stuff there was. I don't know about how you feel about the, you know, Blu-ray yet, because we haven't heard your thoughts about it, but this section, this 7-minute video is all about costume designer Michael Kaplan and his team, and they show you all the different looks and everything they were coming up with Rey and Finn, and he actually talks about, like, what does Finn's outfit actually looks like underneath the Stormtrooper armor, and how it actually changes from being all black to being on the sandy planet, that it starts to turn almost like a lighter gray and stuff, and it kind of is this transition from being the Stormtrooper to the hero that we know him to be. So it was cool extra bonus content that just came out on iTunes, and it's exclusive for those who have the iTunes Digital Edition. But what did you think of all the features that are in there, Danya?
I loved them. I really did. The deleted scenes I could take or leave, they didn't really add much for me. I think it was very, like, obvious why those scenes had been deleted. Like, they didn't really do much more for the film had they stayed in.
I agree. There is still the one, though, that really gets me, though, is when Han, Maz, and Finn are in the tunnel, and the Stormtroopers come in, and he talks about Snoke. He's like, "Smoke? I don't know Smoke." And the Supreme, who, like, that line right there, like, that whole, like, Han Solo, Harrison Ford, you know, like, making fun of Snoke, and what makes him so supreme? Oh, my blaster's broke. Like, that is, like, my favorite deleted scene. It really has become my favorite one. And for some reason, a lot of people don't recognize it, so I have to keep pulling it up on my phone or something just so people can see it and start laughing with me. So that has become my favorite deleted scene.
Yeah, the, like, the blueprint of a battle one was pretty good as well. The one where they basically go through how they did the Rey versus Kylo Ren fight in the snow. Like, that, I really enjoyed that, and seeing how that came together, so... Yeah, some of them were really, really interesting. Like I said, the one about John Williams turned me into a blubbering mess, though. Like, just everything about the music, and just, I couldn't deal with it. I was like, oh my god, this is making me ridiculously emotional. And, yeah. I have a lot of feelings about Star Wars. Apparently they don't go away, ever, so.
Nope. It, you know, we grew up with it. What can we say? But yeah, so new exclusive content footage has come dropped exclusively to iTunes, and of course now The Force Awakens is available not only in the US, but also in the UK and worldwide now.
Yes. Oh, actually, the speaking of, like, costumes and stuff, this may not be as relevant for you, but if we have any female listeners, Her Universe and Hot Topic.
Yes,
have
those
just
things are awesome, right? Sorry.
Yeah, they've teamed up together to do a new line of Force Awakens themed, like, dresses and jackets and leggings and a cardigan, and they are so damn cool.
Okay, I will, like, say this: the Phasma jacket, I think, is one of the coolest ones, but there's Phasma leggings that I saw.
Yeah.
What makes them Phasma leggings? They just look like black leggings to me.
Maybe
I just don't know the nuances of leggings.
There was basically the patterning along the top follows, like, the lines of her armor. And then I think there was, like, a tiny little helmet on it as well. In, like, up by the hip. I think I remember seeing that. Basically, I'm all about the Finn jacket. Like, that jacket is beautiful,
well,
and I need it immediately.
That jacket is awesome, like, even in real life, too, so...
Yeah, but the cut of that jacket would suit my body shape a lot more. I'm very, very short, so jackets that kind of come just to the top of the waist look really flattering on me. So I'm basically all about that jacket, and I don't care that it costs $70. I need it in my life.
Yeah, I actually just went up to Hot Topic's website so I can pull them all up. I do like that it has the, I guess, it's not the Rebel Alliance logo anymore. It's the Resistance logo now, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's both.
It was used for both, right?
Good. Yeah.
It's a very cool jacket. I will admit that. I may or may not be waiting on my really expensive leather version of the Finn jacket. But, yes, that jacket does look very cool. But you know, I'm looking at the pictures here. The model has it with like the really cool Star Wars style boots. So I think you have to wear those types of boots if you wear it with that jacket.
I have like a pair of like black combat-ish boots that I love wearing when I go hiking and walking around and stomping about a lot. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll wear that jacket with my outfit for IndiePopCon. You've got to bring your leather jacket, though.
All right, if I have it in time. I'm also working on some Stormtrooper armor too. Brent, who was on the show, has convinced me to, you know, I have to get to that. So I'm actually working on a blaster right now.
So that's cool.
I know, right? If that's done, I might have to bring it, but I'm worried I'll probably break it because that's more likely to happen. Anyway, moving on to more news before I get distracted and sideways. There was actually a really cool video of Mark Hamill for Force for Change, where you can win two tickets to Celebration Europe, right? Did you get a chance to watch this video? It's only about a minute long, Danya.
Yeah? Yeah, it's got Mark Hamill in it. I think I pretty much watch every single video that has Mark Hamill.
Well, I think most people do, too. And in all honesty, I feel like it's one of those things where if you were the person to win, you really almost need to ask him to take you up on that long walks on the beach part.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, he'd probably be down for it. He kind of said anything that's not illegal. So, I'm all for it. So basically, if you go ahead and visit crowdrise.com/forceforchange or even just starwars.com to get to it, you can go ahead and donate to one of four different charities. And when you do that, between, was it the 26th and May 4th? Yeah. So April 26th and May 4th. So after you're listening to this, you can still donate. Go ahead and donate and you'll get a chance, be entered into a chance to win those two tickets to Star Wars Celebration Europe and meet Mark Hamill. So not just be part of like the crowd when he does his little awesome talk to everybody, but actually get to meet him.
Yes, and if you do happen to win tickets to Star Wars Celebration Europe, let us know because I'm going to be there that weekend. I'm going to be there the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'm still waiting on my press confirmation to come through, but I also bought tickets just in case that didn't happen. So I'll definitely be there one way or the other.
So I wonder if he'll be, you know, just kind of like staring into your eyes or something like that.
Don't.
Oh, man, it's before he's like, oh, hi. Anyway. But yeah,
Mikey,
so
don't.
go ahead and donate for Force of Change. I know I have done it. Obviously, it's a
good
cause. I did that last time with Omaze. Anyway, moving on, StarWars.com also released an article from Jen Heddle talking about Claudia Gray's book, Bloodline. And basically, it really comes down to that we've talked about the book Bloodline already once or twice on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, one, I think the artwork is absolutely awesome. And I think we also talked about when we talked about Princess Leia,
yes.
General Leia Organa, and all that wonderfulness. But it really comes down to that this book is essentially going to become a essential read for anyone who is a Star Wars fan. This book is going to go ahead and talk about why the Resistance was formed, as well as the beginnings of the First Order, how it kind of came about. And there's going to be a little bit more of Han and Leia in there, because this is at the beginning of their, I guess, beginning of the Resistance, probably before we see anything with Ben or anything, and maybe we'll even see a little bit about Luke in it. But the biggest thing is, it has some input from Rian Johnson related to Episode 8. At least story elements. What are those story elements? I don't know. But I definitely think it's going to set us up to see how the First Order came about, and how, even though it's evil, there's reasons for it, like obviously order and, you know, decisive action when something needs to happen. But again, it's a dictatorship, kind of like what the Empire was.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this?
I am so excited. I mean, I was excited for this book before, and the great thing about it is that it's gonna have things in it that's gonna connect directly to the movies, because the one thing that still trips me up about, like, the Force Awakens novelization, for example, is that even though it expands on the movie itself, it kind of also has things that don't quite match up because it was based on an earlier script. However, if you've got Rain basically being like, oh, these are like story ideas and elements that are going to be, you know, important, and you should probably write about this, it can be more abstract, so, and still link in. But I'm like really, 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 really excited, and also excited to see new characters introduced as well, and a little bit more about Han and Leia's relationship too, because I think I saw on a different site something about this Ben is still going to be training with Luke in this book, and he's going to be around 23 years old. So we're possibly going to see a little bit of the fallout of that in this book.
Okay. Yeah, see, I haven't been able to see exactly where in the timeline this actually fits at yet. So that's good. I will say, do you remember what was Claudia's first Star Wars book? Was Lost Stars?
Lost Stars.
Yeah, that was probably one of my favorite books to come out of the Road to the Force Awakens. So it's definitely one of those things where I'm, as a writer, I am really excited just to see how this book kind of takes shape and kind of the story from it.
Yeah, I think her and Greg Rucka are two of the people that I get most excited to see their work, just because I think they've got a great grasp on the universe, and they're able to capture like both familiar characters and introduce new ones really, really well. Like, their stuff has been some of the stuff that I've enjoyed the most out of a lot of the books that have come out. So yeah, I'm just really excited to see her writing more, especially writing for Leia. Like, I think that's what I'm most excited about.
Yep. Well, just one of my last thoughts on Bloodline right now is, honestly, it comes out May 3rd. So guess what? You guys can buy it and spend all day May 4th reading a Star Wars book.
Yes.
just an idea. You know, finish the Star Wars book before you go in to see Civil War or something like that on May 6th, at least in the U.S.,
This is where I get to be happy and gloat slightly, because I get to see it before you.
Yeah.
Hey, you got the Force Awakens DVD, Blu-ray, and digital release before I did, so...
That's true. Yep. Yeah, I did. Anyway, moving on. Last bit of information we have is we have some Twitter posts of the royal family visiting Pinewood Studio. So, all right. Obviously, like, Prince Harry and who else was there?
William.
Okay, so I don't know. Like,
William and Prince Harry.
I did see the pictures of them, like, holding lightsabers and stuff. I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. Like, so, I don't know. Like, I know the royal family is, like, a big deal, and I see all the movies and or all the, you know, tabloid stuff and everything. Like, this is going to sound really bad of me, but, like, are they, like, the same level of, like, high-end celebrities? Are they, like... I know they're royalty, but you obviously have your cabinet and everything else. It's like, so... How are they seen in day-to-day life, for someone living over there?
Oh, my gosh. So, you...
Like, is it, like... my question is, like, it's like, all right, they're royal, but they're, you know, it's kind of something like you aren't monarchy anymore, so... It's more of a respect thing. It's not like a presidency. Like, it's that person, the power. But I don't know. Like, how do you guys see them?
I mean, there is kind of, like, a split between people who think they're kind of redundant and people who are literally obsessed with them. So,
are they like the Kardashians?
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
Well, I honestly don't know. Like, I'm really like, okay, I hope I don't offend anyone with that, because I'm actually curious, because obviously it looks like they just walked onto the set, which is really cool. But I don't know of any like actors or celebrities in the U.S. who would have been able to do that. Like, think about when Episode 7 was being made. Like, everybody, like, even, you know, Simon Pegg was like, "Hey, I want to be in Star Wars." Like, he's like, "Well, yeah, I can put you in there." Like, it was one of those things. Like, there's people who did kind of walk on roles, but they were actually walk on roles. They weren't just like coming by to play with the props and take pictures and stuff like that. So like, I don't know who like what status level they are to be able to just do something that cool.
I mean, pretty much they can do whatever the hell they want. Okay. Like, that's the kind of status level that they're at. They can literally just... Like, they probably just said offhand, like, I want to go to the Star Wars set, and it just... Like, that's it.
And it happened. Okay. Yeah. I get that. But that's cool, you know?
I guess... You know,
Prince
I mean,
Harry, that's cool, man.
Yeah, I guess in terms of, like, how they're perceived... It's really difficult to explain how our monarchy works in, like, really, really simple terms. Like, for example, you know, Parliament, when we have a general election, when the current government has to stand down before a general election, so they go to the Queen and announce that they are stepping down, and then we go into a general election, and then when whichever party wins after that, they then have to go back to an audience with the Queen to announce that they are now taking control of the and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of, like, traditions and rules and kind of... It's a legacy, I think, more than anything else. So,
and you know what? I may or may not have been into this at a round of the way, kind of playing almost devil's advocate, but I think it's the perfect type of legacy to get into Star Wars, because Star Wars itself has had such a strong legacy. First at Leveson, now obviously at Pinewood. And really, what I wanted to talk about with these pictures was, it confirms A-Wings.
Yes.
Yeah, so we saw that X-Wing, I don't know if you guys remember when Force Awakens first came out, we saw J.J. Abrams actually talking about Force for Change a couple years ago, standing in front of a life-size X-Wing, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, the X-Wings, they look different. You know, the blue stripe, and then there was an alien walked by. Now we actually have, it looks like, is that Prince Harry sitting inside one with talking to Mark Hamill?
Yep.
Yeah, it's Harry, and then further down pictures, you have William there. That's just, like, that is really cool, just seeing people being able to visit the set. And the fact that they actually released the photos, you know, Disney's pretty hush-hush when it comes to things like this, but they did release something. Give us a little tidbit of what's coming up in the new movie.
There's absolutely no way that they would have been able to keep this under wraps.
Oh, I'm sure not. Yeah, it's like, come on.
There is nothing that they could have done that could have kept this a secret. It's like, people would have found out. I just love it, though. I wonder, like, there's obviously rumors that they are going to be in the film somewhere as well. Like, they're going to have... They're going to be in the film. The rumor is that they're going to be stormtroopers.
That wouldn't surprise me. That would be kind of cool.
Would be the easiest thing, whether they'll speak or not, or whether we'll be able to ever figure out which ones they are. Like, that's another thing entirely. TK-007.
Just like James Bond there. Anyway. Yeah, so, another familiar ship. Again, we do have the A-Wing returning. We saw that in, obviously, in Rebels. Hera is the person who flies them, and then we also see it in Return of the Jedi. So, A-Wing has definitely got a legacy in Star Wars. Well, let's move on to our spotlight topic here. One of my favorite characters, Chewie himself.
Oh my god, that was so good!
I may or may
not do
it
again.
May or may not have been practicing that for a long time. You know, a little Chewbacca roar. Yes,
that's so good.
We're gonna be talking about Chewbacca. I'm sure. Actually, you know what? Hold on. I want to do something. For the next episode, I want to create an intro of just Chewbacca roars. So if anyone listening can record a Chewbacca roar, email it to us, tweet it at us, something like that, I will put something together. It may or may not be a song all based on Chewbacca's roars. So if you have something, send it to us, and we'll go ahead and put it out together, and we'll be posted on the next episode. Yeah? No? I like that.
Yes, that would be so much fun. I want to hear everyone's Chewbacca roars. I can't do one for the life.
Can you try for us right now?
No.
Can you try?
I'm not embarrassing.
I did it twice.
I know you did, but yours was really good. I will fail. I fail miserably at it.
So, starting about Chewbacca, first of all, Chewbacca is what? 200 years old? 200 plus years old at time of A New Hope, right?
So
he's been around for a while. And talking about the movies, you know, how we see Chewbacca and everything, you know, as I was writing notes about this and everything, the entire Star Wars saga, the story, everything that we have jumped onto from the beginning of A New Hope, the journey that Luke goes on to with Obi-Wan Kenobi and the Death Star and all that, that's all because of Chewbacca. It was Chewie that Obi-Wan talks to. Chewbacca hears the first mate on a ship. And then that's where it leads Luke and Obi-Wan to meet Han Solo and Chewie. They go to Alderaan, which they found has been destroyed. Like, everything is all because of Chewbacca.
So, technically, Chewie saved the galaxy.
Well, and, you know, that's something to think about. So, okay, so, obviously, Chewie's at the cantina in Mos Eisley. He talks to Obi-Wan, and he introduces Han to Obi-Wan and to Luke.
That whole conversation. I love that whole ridiculous conversation.
That whole ridiculous conversation. Yeah, who's going to fly the ship and everything. But you know, it's a good conversation that gets us kind of going into the story. You know, this is the first time we meet an alien, if you will. Unless you thought Darth Vader was an alien the first time the films were there. So the first time you meet an alien who has some type of interaction. Obviously, when you go to Cantina, you see all the aliens and everything. You saw the sand people before. But this is like an interaction that you have with a character. And obviously, it's a character that is seen through those three films that are in that trilogy. And in the newest film. And he was even in Revenge of the Sith.
Yes, he was,
right? We'll talk about that in a second. So Chewie, he starts off the whole thing. And we find out right from there that he is the first mate on the Millennium Falcon with the captain of Han Solo. And, you know, Han and Chewie have an interesting relationship. What do you think of the relationship between Han and Chewie, Danya?
I think it's one of my favorite friendships in the entire trilogy. Like, I really, really enjoy watching it because they're so damn close. Like, they get each other. They've got each other's backs. There's a lot of history there. And the thing is, as well, is the being able to get as much as we do out of, like, emotional fulfillment from this friendship is so fascinating, considering that, for the most part, we don't know what Chewbacca is actually saying. You know, it's much in the same way as with the droids and them speaking in some form of binary. Like, we can't actually tell exactly what they're saying, but there's nuance in how they move and how they react and how they kind of go through the films that we can kind of infer from that. And just, I absolutely love watching them, which is the thing obviously about The Force Awakens that is the most devastating is the fact that they're separated, permanently separated.
I know. It definitely is kind of heartbreaking there. Well, it's interesting that you bring up, like, the way he moves. Obviously, there's a vocal tone, the way his speech patterns are and everything. But the way he moves and the way he kind of, shrugs his head, shoulders, stuff like that. In The Force Awakens, a Blu-ray, there's actually, I don't remember what extra it is, but there's an interview with Peter Mayhew's talking about, I think it was actually the main one, the big featurette one, The Secrets of the Force Awakens, if I remember correctly. But there's an interview with Peter, and he talks about how he was teaching Jonas the body double, the stunt double for Chewbacca. And he's like, you know, Chewie would kind of move his head like this and stuff like that when you would talk or something like that. So it's definitely interesting as a character, especially this relationship with Han, because, you know, without saying Chewbacca is a dog, you know, you have to remember that the inspiration for Chewbacca came from George Lucas's dog, known who was Indiana. He was an Alaskan Malamute. I don't know. Just a big hairy dog. I remember seeing this a long time ago.
In a galaxy far,
far away. Far, far away somewhere, right? But yeah, so, you know, Chewbacca's character came about because, you know, George Lucas's relationship with his dog. And in all honesty, I see Chewbacca as, like, the most loyalist friend, like the most loyal friend ever to Han. He's through the thick and thin. And we see that going all the way through, especially to, like, well, let's just move on, even to, say, like, Empire Strikes Back. You know, he's the one that holds Leia, C-3PO, and eventually Lando together when Han is taken by Boba Fett in Carbonite, you know? He's the one that helps, you know, he's the one that's flying the Falcon. You know, so he is perpetually there. And he goes into Jabba's lair with Leia to go help rescue Han. So, like, Chewie is that... I don't want to call... He's a loyal friend. He's just, like, the best friend that everyone wants to have, right?
He's also, like, the glue that kind of starts binding everyone together. Because you've got to think in Empire, he is just as emotionally devastated as everyone else about what happens with Han and when he's taken by Jabba and when he's put into Carbonite. Like, that for Chewie is, like, such a huge, hugely emotional moment. And, yeah, he has, like, a reaction to it, but he holds it together, like, amazingly well, and then pulls everyone else together and keeps them moving forward. Like, that's a huge testament to who he is as a character, because it's just that friendship is so hugely important to him, but he knows that he can't allow those emotions to take over him, because he needs to get him back. So I just, it's so great, but I love him so much.
Do you think Chewie's almost like a moral compass also for Han? Because going back to A New Hope, it's also Chewbacca who convinced Han to go back after they received the reward from the Rebel Alliance. You know, and it, obviously if that didn't happen, Darth Vader had Luke in his sights and everything, and it would have turned out completely different if Luke wasn't able to get those proton torpedoes off to destroy that first Death Star. But it's obviously Chewie and Han came back, and it was Chewbacca that convinced Han. You know, what do you think of that?
I can see that. I mean, Han is such an amazingly flawed and fascinating character. Just throughout the whole trilogy. Like, he's so interesting to, like, look at behind, like, all of his bluster and his kind of putting on a front and a kind of facade of who he is. But I think with Chewbacca and their closeness is that Chewbacca can see through that so incredibly well that he can get to the heart of everything a lot quicker and a lot more effectively than anyone else, until maybe Leia. So I think absolutely that Chewbacca can be that, can be and is that moral compass for Han, but I also think that only works because Chewbacca knows him so well and therefore does know how to influence and get to the heart of what Han is really feeling. And yeah, it's just, they're so hugely important to each other. Like, that's, it's just such a central relationship. I could not imagine, and I can't imagine what Star Wars is going to be like without that friendship. At least somewhere in it. Like, it's going to be so strange knowing that this universe needs to continue on without that. And, you know, obviously up until Chewbacca met Han, he'd obviously lived a very, very many years without having Han in his life. But I think that relationship irrevocably changed them both. And now having to adjust back to a life without him is going to be incredibly difficult. But yeah, absolutely, I think that Chewbacca has a very definite influence on Han. Whether it's him strictly being a moral compass or just him, like, knowing how to influence him or knowing Han better than anyone, that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why I brought it up, you know, him being kind of a moral compass for him on a couple different occasions. But in A New Hope, you know, one of the things that always bugged me about Chewbacca, and I love Chewie, don't get me wrong, is he never got his medal at the end of A New Hope. Now, they eventually gave it to him. Like, I don't remember, there was a ceremony somewhere, I think it was like the MTV movie Awards or something like that, where Chewbacca finally got a medal. But it's like, he never got a medal. They gave it to Luke and Han. But I think Chewie deserves a medal in my heart, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, co-pilots still do a hell of a lot of work when it comes to having to pilot things. And you see, especially even in like The Force Awakens as well, is that the Falcon is incredibly difficult to pilot on your own. Having a co-pilot is almost essential. And so it kind of is a little bit strange that Chewbacca doesn't get honored. And I wonder, it's so weird. I wonder if it's a little bit of speciesism, like not respecting other life forms outside of like human, which is, it's a very horrible look to have on this universe that you would hope would be a lot more inclusive and accepting, but it doesn't make any sense why they wouldn't also honor him. Unless he's maybe not seen completely as a being in his own right. Like, that's kind of one of those things that's kind of like, did they not think of, is that not something they considered, or is that a conscious message that they're...
I don't know. So there's an interview with Peter Mayhew about this, and the reason I bring it up is, like, Peter said there's two reasons he thinks Chewbacca didn't get a medal. You know, this is from Chewbacca himself, if you will.
Okay.
They didn't have enough money to buy him a medal. Just budget at the time of A New Hope. Which...
I thought you meant the Rebel Alliance then, and I was like, wait.
Maybe the Rebel Alliance didn't have enough money either. You know, they just spent all the money blowing up the Death Star. So yeah, so maybe that too. But, you know, they didn't have enough money to buy him. Or two, he said, Carrie couldn't reach his neck, and it was probably just too expensive to build a little step so that he can step down, or she can step up and give him the medal. Which, I think, you know, like, those are both valid reasons, cinematically, to avoid it. The reason I bring this, I have that, you know, kind of a line directly from Peter is, I pulled up the article of when he did eventually get his medal. So MTV gave Chewbacca their Lifetime Achievement Award medal in 1997, and Carrie Fisher is the one who put the medal around his neck. So he did finally get it, just not in the movies or in canon, if you will, but he got it in real life, because who doesn't love Chewie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't get my head around that Carrie Fisher is too short to reach as a fellow short person.
Well, isn't like Peter was what, 7'2"? Is he like 7'2"? Like he's tall. Chewbacca's a big guy. You know,
I think Carrie Fisher is around my height.
Which is what, like 6'1", 5'1"? I don't know.
Really? Come on. Okay. If you could make a guess, how tall do you think she is?
Okay, I think like 5'3", 5'4", maybe. I don't know. Let's see. Let's see what the internet has to say about Carrie Fisher.
Oh, yes. There's 1 inch in height between myself and Carrie Fisher.
Which is what?
I'm 5 foot dead. She's 5'1".
Oh, wow. Is she really only 5'1"? I thought she was a little bit taller.
No, she's 5'1". I need to meet her now. Fellow short people, united.
There you go. All right, yeah, so Chewie gets his medal, and real reason is probably because Carrie Fisher couldn't reach his neck. That's 2 feet above you. I can take that. So going on to Chewbacca real quick, beyond the medals here.
Oh my God. I'm just imagining.
So we talked a little bit about him being the co-pilot, right? But obviously he's not just like a co-pilot. Like in Force Awakens we see... Rey not being able to turn on things like the deflector shield, stuff like that, because they're all the way on the other side where the co-pilot is. But Chewie also flies the Falcon fairly often. In Return of the Jedi, Han tells Chewie fly casual as they're going to land on Endor, you know, because he didn't know how to fly past a Star Destroyer, right? So obviously Chewie's the one who's actually piloting, even though he's the co-pilot. And beyond that, you know, he has... You know, Chewie has this innate knack to not just be able to pilot like the Falcon, but able to pilot, you know, AT-STs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was able to team up with some Ewoks and riding an AT-ST, and probably one of my favorite scenes in Return of the Jedi, of him walking right up to Han and then just opening up the hatch and be like, "Hey, buddy!" Like, I feel like that's what Chewbacca was saying. It was like, "Hey, buddy, look, I mean, look what I got." You know, it's cool, right? So what do you think? How do you think Chewie reacted to the Ewoks and everything on Endor? Obviously, we see him take that AT-ST with a pair of Ewoks. And I remember being a little kid. Now, obviously, I know this is not true, but I remember they're like, "Oh, they're like his little brothers." Like, I remember being a little kid, and they were like little versions of Chewbacca, right? So, how do you think? Because obviously, and you were talking about speciesism earlier when he wasn't getting like the medal. Do you think, you know, Chewbacca was able to form a different type of relationship or bond with the Ewoks?
That's a really good question. It's obvious that there is, like, a really almost immediate connection between them, and I wonder if it is because that they're seen as an other, almost, that they're... that, you know, we do see prejudices throughout, like, the Star Wars universe, like, when they don't serve droids, when they don't do certain things. You have to also imagine that there's probably other variations of that throughout the galaxy. So I think that there would be a certain amount of banding together, I guess. Especially when... I mean, obviously, as a kid, it would be a logical step to take, thinking that they're somehow related, like miniature versions, because they look fairly similar-ish in respect to fur and so on. So, you know, there's a visual relation there of some kind. And yeah, I don't know. It's kind of interesting to think about how those bonds are forged and how those different relationships come to be and how they connect to different species throughout the Star Wars universe, based on potentially how they're treated and how they're respected. Because, they're very primitive, the Ewoks. They're very isolated and very tribal in respect to how they treat other people and their actual culture. So it's very interesting to think about.
Yeah, and obviously we know Wookiees, and through Chewbacca, that they can understand, you know, basic or English, and, you know, some people can actually understand, you know, Wookiee language also. So there's obviously a different level of what I would say intelligence between the Ewoks and Chewbacca. But we also see, you know, the Ewoks take to Leia fairly quickly also. I think it's not just necessarily their species or anything like that, but more even just their heart. You know, Leia was not captured or anything like that by the Ewoks, unlike Han, Luke, the droids, and Chewie were captured. But it was more Leia befriended one of the Ewoks early on, right? Remember giving him Wicket food? And Chewbacca, I think, also kind of befriended the Ewoks in a way, just because of his good-natured self. You know, Chewbacca, like we had talked about, as being a loyal friend. You know, he's one of those things where Chewie has a big heart, and I think it's just his acceptance of them and everything maybe is what kind of drew them together, maybe more. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I mean, the other thing is that Leia is also fairly gentle and fairly... with them, at least. She's very friendly, open, and warm around them. And
I don't think that's anything wrong with that, being friendly, open, and warm. I think that's also, especially with Leia, I think that's just kind of who her character is. Almost the perpetual diplomat, if you will.
Yeah.
Which, you know, plays into kind of talking about her character from a couple episodes ago, is she always did what she knew best. You know, she was the diplomat, she was the general, she was the princess, you know, she was all those things. And I think that same type of characterization of her can almost be this tied to Chewie. You know, he was there to you know, from Han, he was always the muscle for Han, but I felt like he was always just like the big guy who was lovable, making jokes and everything, and tied to the Ewoks. I think they saw that also as like someone who once he became friends with them, would never back down, would always have their back, if you will.
Yeah.
All right. So, Chewie we saw, obviously, through A New Hope, Empire, Return of the Jedi, and we see his relationship with Han and the other characters, but we also saw him in Revenge of the Sith, on Kashyyyk, on the Wookiee homeworld, if you will, which is before, I'm assuming before Han was born, because that's, what, 19, well, no, Han should have been around, but obviously he was a kid still. That's 19 years before A New Hope takes place, and he knows Yoda. One of my favorite scenes in Revenge of the Sith was just having Yoda ride on Chewbacca's back.
I know.
You know, and I will tell you this. I remember, you know, I'm going back to years, 2003. Yeah, 2003 is Revenge of the Sith. Going back, thinking about... Oh, 2005 was Revenge of the Sith. So going back to, the, you know, thinking about when Revenge of the Sith was released, and I was positive it was Chewbacca, but you never know until he says, thank you, Chewbacca, until Yoda actually refers to him.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where we know, obviously, Chewbacca knows Han and builds that relationship, but he obviously knew Yoda, too, and he knew the Jedi, and so that's kind of cool to know that there's a whole backstory to Chewbacca, you know, 200 years more of a story where he's always been this awesome, good character that we like, just because, at least for me, you know, liking Chewbacca, you know, liking Yoda is the same thing as, like, liking Han. You know, he's drawn to the good characters and stuff like that that we know. So I would love to see, like, a comic or something about Chewie before Han, just so I can contrast to see how he's going to go on now after Force Awakens.
Yeah, I'd like that. I also think it's very interesting to think about Chewbacca and the Jedi, and his knowledge of the Jedi and possibly their whole setup and everything that happened in Revenge of the Sith and the fallout of all of that, especially with, like, Han's initial cynicism. Like, I wonder how much Han actually knows of what Chewbacca has seen.
I almost wonder if Han not believing it and not thinking in some hokey religious stuff is probably part of because of Chewbacca. Can you imagine? So you have to think about it this way, alright? So just imagine this. Chewbacca is 200 plus years old at the time him and the time we meet him and Han Solo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know they have a buddy relationship. They're great friends. They're both extremely loyal to each other. And Han knows Chewie's an older man. Like an older, you know, he's 200 years old, right?
Yeah.
Think of any of your elders or someone that you've heard stories from. I love my grandfather, and he tells me these stories. And some of these stories, I'm like, did that really happen, Grandpa? Or are you, like, embellishing? You know what I mean? Like, kind of, like, adding a little something extra to make it more fantastical.
Yeah.
And I'm almost wondering if some of the things about the Jedi that Han knows, he learned from Chewbacca, and he's thinking that. He's like, okay, you're old now, buddy. I get it. You know, like, he doesn't believe it because... You know, it's a handed down story. You know, it's not a, you know, factual, you know, depiction. There's not a video of what the Jedi did because they were destroyed.
There's no vines.
Yeah, there's no vines or anything like that. So it's literally like, so it's the story that his best friend is telling him. He's like, really? It was that big? They jumped that far? Like, you know, it's like, think about, like, have you ever embellished a story to a friend? Yeah, you have. Like, it's like, oh man, you don't even know. I was doing this, and I did that, and it was, okay, sure. But I'm almost wondering if that was, if that's kind of how Han took his thoughts on the Jedi, was because of Chewbacca, and thinking it was just like, okay, but, like, you know, just kind of like the best, like, sure, I'll believe you, like, you know, the, you know, not really, you know, just placating type thing, if you will. So I would love to see more backstory of Chewbacca. What do you think about the backstory of Chewbacca before A New Hope?
What do I think of it? I think it would be very interesting to see. I would love to see basically what it would be like on the homeworld. Like, how that plays out, what relationships he'd forged, kind of how he became the person that he was, how he ended up gravitating towards Han, why they went that way. Because obviously there was a little bit in, like, the EU, but...
Yeah, there was a lot in the EU.
But you can't take that at face value anymore, so you can't even look at that and be like, oh, well, that's how it went down, because now we know that, well, actually, they may or may not readopt that, but for now, it's a legend, so it's not how it happened. So anything kind of goes at this point. But
yeah, and that's something I would like. You know, although I read an article once that said, the problem with Star Wars is, and Star Wars fans in general, I don't think this is a problem, but apparently people think it is, that with Star Wars, people want to know everything and anything, like all the things that could be just left alone. It was a review of the C-3PO comic when he gets the red arm.
Okay.
So it was like, I thought it was an okay comic. It wasn't great, but, you know, it told us something that we kind of wanted to know. I would like to know more about Chewbacca and, you know, beforehand and stuff like that and what his life was. One of my favorite characters in the extended universe, obviously Legends now, was Lobaka. I don't know if you know who Lobaka is, Danya. But it was a nephew of Chewbacca who was actually a Jedi trained under Luke Skywalker, which I thought was like the coolest thing ever, seeing a Wookiee Jedi.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, is that I would love to see and love to continue to see more Jedi who are not human. Like, that's something that I want to see more of, because that's more fascinating to me, because I want to see this universe expanded out more. Like, I want to see different species brought in and used, and so stuff like that. Like, a Wookiee Jedi, that's so damn cool. Come on.
I agree with you. There's actually, I saw something on Reddit the other day, speaking beyond just a Wookiee Jedi, would be a Plo Koon as a detective type TV show. Like, if you know who Plo is from the prequels, the Jedi Master that was on the Council.
Yeah.
And if you watched him on the Clone Wars TV show, he definitely has that kind of, like, he's the detective style Jedi, and it would be awesome to have him just, like, as a, like, going through the life of Plo and Kit Fisto, I think is what they said. They wanted Plo and Kit as detectives going through the course on Underbelly.
Oh my God.
How cool would that be, right? Just completely random, like, Jedi as detectives.
That would be so interesting,
though. Plo and Kit, right? Or Koon and Fisto. I don't remember. It was really funny, but someone had a whole premise of, like, the story of Plo Koon and Kit Fisto, which are obviously not human characters. So, I want to go into, still talking about Chewbacca. We actually got a comment on our Facebook page from one of our fans. It's related to our spotlight character, Chewbacca. Danya, do you want to read this for us?
Yes, absolutely. So, the comment says, "Hey guys, I have loved every episode, and it's so fun to listen to other people who adore Star Wars as much as myself, i.e. level of dorkiness that compels me to weep during the special features for Force Awakens." Oh, me too! I've got a question for you all, though. Am I the only one devastated for poor Chewie having to live on without Han? They are peas and carrots through and through, and to be separated must be misery for him. I might get hate for this, but I feel like it would be in Chewie's character of unwavering loyalty to sacrifice himself and be killed trying to avenge Han on the bridge. And for Ben, other than patricide, it doesn't get any more dark side than dispatching the family's trusty walking carpet. It would be doubly tragic and gut-wrenching, but I feel like in life or death, Chewie and Han are supposed to be together. It would break all our hearts, but it just feels wrong to have them apart, and would be the most compassionate way for the character. Hashtag ride together, die together. Amy.
Oh, man. So I specifically avoided the whole Kylo Ren Force Awakens conversation with him, because I want to tie this comment into our conversation here. I'm going to have to start with a Vader long no on this, because I really don't want Chewie to die.
Yeah, same.
I just know he can't die. But at the same time, I totally get it. Like, I think literary and film stuff, you know, cinematically, does it make sense? And would it kind of give you, would it push the character even further? I would say, or at least Kylo Ren even further, I would say yes. It would definitely make sense and something I don't want it to happen. It hurts. I want to see, I actually almost even want to see, you know, in episode 8, because we know it happens right after episode 7, I want to see the effects of Han's death. I want to see it in Chewie. I want to see it in Leia. I want to see how they are grieving with it. I don't know how much the EU our listeners have read before, but there was a, I think it was like 17 book series, it was the New Jedi Order book series, where there something actually happened. And in the book series, which is again Legends, Han didn't die, but Chewbacca actually died. So it's a great book series. It actually was like gut-wrenching, the book. Basically, in the book series, again, this is Legends, Chewbacca died saving one of Han's kids, which is kind of similar opposite of what happened actually in the movie, right? But it was really interesting because this entire book series followed Han going through being, starting to drink too much, becoming a social outcast. His relationship with Leia became strained. Again, we see all that happen in the movie, but in a different way. So I really actually want to see how Chewie actually handles Han's death. As it is, you know, Han's death was already gut-wrenching, and obviously Harrison Ford was asking for that to happen to kind of help push his, you know, help tell move the story along. But I think Chewie can become almost even a Yoda character in the series because he's been through all that and he's seen the loss and everything. There was also a comic about when he shoots Kylo Ren, when he shoots Ben. The comic actually takes it where he has Kylo Ren's face in his sights. You know, Chewie is a great shot. And he decided not to shoot, you know, Kylo in the face, but to shoot him more in the chest, where he did get shot at. And I'm almost wondering if he's like, I can't shoot someone who, like, because again, he grew up with, you know, he was the loyal friend of Han Solo. You know, he knew who Kylo Ren was. He knew who Ben was. He probably watched Ben grow up. You know what I mean? He probably played with him, changed his diaper, and all those types of things. So
he's probably essentially an uncle figure.
Yeah, that's it's like, you know, it's like your second dad. It's your Uncle yeah. Chewie, you know what I mean? And it's the whole thing, like the whole dynamic there, I really want them to die, you know, to really flesh it out in the next episode, you know, episode 8, just because I really want to see how Chewie handles with Han's death. I want to see how Rey takes to it. Does she have, you know, is she upset about it? Obviously, you know, she, you know, took to Han fairly quickly. Even Kylo Ren says, you think he'd be a good father? No, it's not, you know, he's not. At least not to Ben, who was. But it's one of those things where she took to him. Luke knew Han for years. Leia was obviously, you know, they were together. How are they going to affect this? Is this going to affect Rey's growing as a Jedi? Is this going to affect Chewie actually helping out Leia going forward? You know, like, ride together, die together, I think it would be, you know, poetic in a way, but I would not want Chewie to die. At least not after what we've been through with Han passing away the way he did in, you know, in Force Awakens. Is it a possibility? You know, who knows?
Yeah, obviously, like you said, it would be very poetic to see him die to be with Han in what could be another life sort of thing. You know, seeing that friendship transcend almost. But I think there's also something powerful in watching someone overcome their grief and continue to do good and continue to move along and kind of affect the world in a very positive way, which I think for Chewbacca would be a really powerful storyline. Especially because he's alongside Rey now. Rey is this hope for the galaxy. He's got her to Luke. They're going to bring
balance to the Force? They're going to bring balance to the Force now?
Yeah, I mean, you would hope. But it's kind of, I think there's a lot more to explore with his character that would be really, really interesting to see play out. Like, with how close Rey and Han got in such a short amount of time, will he equally get as close? Like, almost use her as a kind of surrogate for these overwhelming feelings that he probably has? Like, would he feel protective of her? You know, how I want to see kind of how his relationship with Leia continues to go, because obviously, you know, they're going to have been very close. They went through so much through the original trilogy, and obviously he must have been around when Ben was growing up. So there's just so much more that they can explore with him. And I think, honestly, something that would be a lot more difficult, a lot more powerful for me is seeing him outlive everyone. Like, that would be, it would be devastating, it would be horrible, but poetic in a different way, to see him have to continue living when everyone around him is kind of dying. Oh my god,
now
everyone's gonna hate me.
Well, think about it this way. Think about it this way. Like, we were talking about, like, I would like to know more about Chewie's before Han, right? He's already 200 years old. He's seen life and death. You know, he knew Yoda, and he knows Yoda. He knew the Jedi Order. He knew the Old Republic, and all that's gone. He saw it all collapse. He, you know, we don't, you know, there's legends about how him and Han Solo, you know, when I say legends, there's the legend book series and comics and stuff that aren't part of canon anymore, of how Han and Chewie came together. You know, Chewbacca owes Han Solo a life debt for saving him. But, you know, that's not official anymore. At least I haven't seen it anywhere official.
No,
as released. But, you know, it's one of those things where maybe they're just going to keep that because it does make sense and everything. But, you know, Chewie has seen a lot in his life already, and he's going to continue to live on. Knock on wood right now. I don't want, you know, him to do it, you know, die anytime soon. But I will say it would be interesting if Chewbacca as a character was eventually to die, but he had to die, like Amy said, would be avenging Han Solo. I don't want him to avenge Han Solo because I really hope that there's some type of redemption for Kylo Ren, or at least an attempt of redemption. And I think Chewie, just because we talked about how we don't know what Chewie says, we don't know what BB-8 or the droids say, and we just kind of infer, I would hate to have that conversation be a completely one-way conversation when you see the attempted redemption of Kylo Ren. Not that I don't think it would be any less, but, you know, people would need to know both sides of the conversation that's happening. It's like, I'll never turn from the dark side or something like that. And you just hear, well, no. I don't care if he was my father. Like, it just wouldn't work. That was really bad. But you get that, like, you get the idea. Like, if it's between Rey and Ren, or if it's between Luke and Ren, or Leia and Ren, or something like that, you'll have the dialogue back and forth between the light and dark, kind of like the Luke Skywalker and Palpatine fight conversation in actually Luke Skywalker and Vader conversation, not Palpatine, in Return of the Jedi, like when Luke is hiding after that battle, and you see the light, you know, the light and dark is on his face and everything. Again, cinematic, poetic. But it's one of those things where in that conversation, you hear Vader talk to him, and Luke is eventually able to respond with just even a no. But it's that conversation without someone being able to respond to it, I think just wouldn't work out, at least not cinematically.
It'd be very difficult.
Yeah, in a novel or something like that, it would work because you'd be able to be inside his head. But I will say, I agree, if Ben was to kill, or Kylo Ren was to kill Chewbacca, or Chewie was to get in the way to do it, it would definitely be really gut-wrenching and just beyond tragic, just because we've already had his best friend taken from us and everything else with it. So, good comment, Amy. I do appreciate it, but I'm going to have to disagree with you. I don't want him to die avenging Han. I still want him to avenge Han, but just not die doing it.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else about Chewbacca dying? Anything I skipped over right now?
Not that I can think of. I was just, like, considering if he was unable to do Ben any physical harm when he was on the bridge, especially after he actually killed Han and he's just watched him drop. Like, if he's purposely missed the shot, would he ever actually be able to go through with it? Like, I think that with Chewbacca, he knows, or he would have known, that Han would have wanted to honor Leia's, like, Leia's thoughts and Leia's feelings for wanting to bring Ben home. So would he continue that in Han's memory to do that? To, if he comes up against Ben again, that he would basically want to bring him home. Because that's the last thing that Han tried to do. Would he try and finish what Han started in that respect? Like, that's something I'm kind of mulling over in my head. Because he's so loyal to that family. So.
Okay. So, I agree with you completely. And actually, I pulled up the Ben comic that I was talking about. And I think we've all seen it at some point in time.
Yeah.
It was done by Tyze Murph. He's the lead character artist for Blizzard Entertainment and WoW and all that stuff. The comic he drew, literally just for those who haven't seen it, and I'll post it on our website. It's called Ben, and you see Chewbacca holding Ben as a baby, Chewbacca holding Ben as a, you know, seeing, showing him the bowcaster as a young kid, and Chewie with a smile on his face and Ben with a smile on his face as he's probably a teenager. And then you see Chewie and him sitting down with Ben, you know, putting his head over and then walking away as an angsty kid. And then you see Chewie by himself. Then, of course, it goes to The Force Awakens, where you see a cell of Han and Ben and the lightsaber going through Han. Man, that's gut-wrenching just looking at it.
Yeah.
And then you see Chewie with this growl on his face, and he has the crosshairs right on Kylo Ren's face. And then the next cell is him thinking about it. And then tears running down his eyes, and he pulls it, and he moves it lower, and then shoots. So it's definitely one of those things where I think this comic, besides being gut-wrenching, is definitely kind of the sentiment that I think would be what Chewie would be emotionally feeling. You know, it's one of those things like, how does he kill someone who is, you know, essentially family? You know what I mean? Like, we saw Ben do it, and, you know, it looks like he even struggled with it. You know, he had trouble doing what he wanted to do in killing his father. You know, Chewie has no desire to kill, you know, Ben, and he knew as soon as Han stepped out there what he was trying to do. He knew Leia and Han wanted their son back. Could he have killed, you know, essentially his nephew? You know what I mean? So.
I think that would be what would separate them. I think where maybe Ben was able to push himself to that point, that he's been influenced so much by the dark side that he was able to get to that point to do it, that Chewie would never be able to bring himself to do the same thing.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Alright, now that I'm thoroughly sad, is there anything we missed about Chewbacca? I'm sure there is. If there is, go ahead and let us know, everybody. Tanya, anything we missed?
Not that I could think of off the top of my head.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you for listening. This was our Spotlight topic on Chewbacca. If we did miss anything, please let us know either on hypeable.com or through email. Again, you can contact us through our website at resistanceradio.net or on Twitter at rradiopodcast. Next week, we're going to be talking about Kylo Ren. So kind of the flip side of this conversation we were just talking about, everybody. So until then, I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Danya. And we'll see you on the next episode.